and it seems...
So they're using the same technique, but in a condensed manner.
Yes, and now the Zionists have been occupying huge swaths of Gaza and for a while now, so the resistance knows their supply routes, their movements, their bases where they're gathering. And because it's such a huge territory for them, there's a lot of space for the resistance to hit them in their supply routes.
Okay, going back to the report that we were watching, and then definitely along the episode we will be commenting more about Beit Hanun, because it's a very important topic that took place this morning. Do you think Trump will move towards announcing, really, guarantees to end the war in Gaza, Mr. Bay, the way that he's talking about it?
Well, you know, I caution this idea that there's a difference between Trump and Biden. Look, the American empire has been signing treaties and with peoples for the last 200 years, and they've broken every treaty with every indigenous nation inside the United States and every other nation outside that they dealt with. So nothing's going to change from that point. We also saw yesterday with the envoy of Trump, Barack, when he was here in Beirut and was asked about being the guarantors and stopping the Israeli attacks on Lebanon.
He said,
we are not guaranteeing anything. So the words of Americans...
They are the mediators, and they're the ones keeping themselves in that position when it comes to overseeing these breaches by the Israelis.
So no word coming out of any American can be trusted, period.
Okay. However, the Gaza war is draining the occupation forces and inflicting heavy losses on them daily. Therefore, Netanyahu must make the decision to stop it immediately, as military analyst in the Hebrew media says. Well, what's your opinion on the increasing calls within the Israeli entity, Mr. Leif, to stop the war on Gaza, especially after the heavy losses suffered by the occupation forces there? And this question here is even before Beit Hanun was prepared, even before the operation of Beit Hanun in northern Gaza, which also adds to the problem.
Look, in terms of the battle on the ground, this has always been an anti-colonial liberation struggle of a people that are occupied and besieged against a huge military and empire behind it. And always that means guerrilla warfare, and that's the only way people that are disadvantaged militarily, as the Palestinians are, can win a war. So the Palestinians have been waging an amazing guerrilla warfare, and this is what's making them cry, that they want to face off with...
But that wasn't expected after 20 months. 20 months of fighting, 20 months of suffering, 20 months of starvation.
Yes.
For the resistance to come back with such operations, that's like really shocking to the Israelis.
That's shocking
Wouldn't that put more pressure on Netanyahu?
That's shocking to the Israelis, as it was shocking for the French how the Algerians resisted, or the Americans how the Vietnamese resisted under those conditions. Remember, Algeria lost 6 million people in that struggle for liberation, and so did Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. So the Palestinian people have decided October 7th that they are not going to be any more slaves to the Zionists, and they are going to fight this till the end result, which is liberation. And the costs, as we see, are mounting on the Zionists. And because the Zionists are supremacists and used to living the high life in New York and Toronto and London, they are going to give up very soon.
Okay, but do you think that Netanyahu will listen to these calls?
Well, the main problem with Netanyahu and Zionism as a whole is that it goes beyond just imperialism and colonialism. They actually believe that they are the chosen people. They are the superior, supreme race. Mm-hmm. And this is what's actually making them stay in this fight for so long. But Iran's whipping of the Zionist colony during the 12-day war has now shattered these ideas of supremacy and the fact that...
And the possibility of hitting it deep.
Yes, and the U.S. is unable for the first time to defend the Zionist colony.
Okay. In the Gaza Strip, Zionist soldiers are not only being killed by resistance fire, but also by the fire of their own comrades in the occupation army due to confusion and fear that dominate them, something that one commentator in the Hebrew media explained. How do you actually explain this? I mean, it's a very new phenomenon among the Zionists where soldiers are hitting each other or killing each other due to confusion and fear.
Well, first off, we've got to take those numbers with a grain of salt, mm-hmm. because according to the Minister of Defense, it's 15,000 bereaved families, mm-hmm. meaning 15,000 Israeli soldiers dead since the beginning of the war. That's 2 months ago, this number. That's number one. Number two
is... We always have problems with numbers anyway.
Yeah, we know now that there has been at least 10 Israeli soldiers that committed suicide, including one a few days ago that set himself on fire.
Yes.
And so we have to remember that soldiers on the ground there,
He said, I've always been seeing corpses during my sleep.
Yes. So not only could these numbers that they're talking about of friendly fire incidents could be explained in mistakes, some of them could be actually deliberate.
Deliberate. Okay? Why?
Because we saw how American soldiers in Vietnam would walk into a tent with the officers and kill the officers.
Why?
Because they are having to live this reality. Some of them have conscience, maybe.
Okay.
Some of them, after 21 months of seeing this, maybe are fed up and want to end the war.
Is it because they're obliged to do this?
Of course, they are soldiers, and mm-hmm. they have no, they didn't have the courage to go to jail, not to serve.
Exactly.
But now that they are in this situation, they can't leave either. So yeah. we can... Probably half of these numbers that they're talking about are deliberate actions of infighting within the Israeli military, and they are covering it up.
Okay, this phenomenon that we spoke about is very important. And in addition to it, we do have the psychological well-being of these soldiers. A lot of them, they're committing suicide, according to you, and according to the news. And on one side, also, we have an escalation in these operations. All these factors will not pressure Netanyahu to come to a decision.
That's where everybody is hoping. You know, everybody is pushing the fact that Iran didn't destroy the Zionist colony after the 12-day war, which it could have, is all to give a door out for the Zionists mm-hmm. and for the West to take out their European garbage from Palestine and take them back home. And so, unfortunately, the people that are in charge in the Zionist colony have lost any relation to reality. And they have put so much into this idea of supremacy that their own population that are Jewish around the world also are unable now to relate to reality. So we need to continue this war until they wake up to reality and leave.
Okay. The failure to achieve the war's objectives in the Gaza Strip has exacerbated the disputes between the chief of staff and Netanyahu and ministers in his cabinet. Sessions held to assess the situation in Gaza witness fierce debates and arguments. Where could the disputes between the chief of staff and Netanyahu's cabinet over the failure to achieve the war's objective lead?
This is a dead end, basically, for mm-hmm. them. And you remember that this is the third chief of staff in this position since the beginning of this war, 21,
yes.
22 months ago. So that shows you that no matter what the political objectives of the political parts of Israel, they can't achieve them because militarily it's an impossibility to control, occupy Gaza completely without a huge cost in lives of the population. We already see how it took tens of thousands of Palestinian martyrs, and they still haven't controlled the strip, and 15,000 at least Israeli soldiers dead. So it's an impossibility militarily without a mass genocide, okay? And we're already in that mass.
And even if a mass genocide is happening, but also they're not achieving the objectives.
Yes.
Is that the major reason behind this dispute between the chief of staff and Netanyahu's cabinet?
Yes. So the military has the reality on the ground, military reality, and they calculate things
and tells.
And every time over the last 20 months, when the leadership of the military said this is unachievable, they have been removed from their position,
yes,
and a new person came
in. Yes.
So now they are on the third iteration of leadership in their military, and they're telling them still the truth. And this guy may lose his job very soon.
Okay. From the arguments between the chief of staff or the American decision to supply the Israeli entity with B-2 aircraft, drew the attention of commentators in the Hebrew media. A former commander of the Air Force in the occupation army said, where chasing these planes is extremely expensive, and the entity doesn't need them as long as it can request these planes to join whenever necessary, just like what happened during the war with Iran. Do you think that the decision by the Americans to sell B-2 planes to the occupation army, to the Israeli entity, is to show a political support to the Israelis and threaten or keep a pressure on Iran in an indirect way, or it's a serious matter?
I think it's more about keeping pressure. Yes, yeah. But it could happen. Why? Because obviously the Israelis don't pay nothing for any of their weapons.
Yeah, the commentator said that. Yeah. So why should we buy it as long as we can have it whenever we want to?
Yes, so they can continue letting the Americans come and fight wars on their behalf, but also they can pretend that they bought and the Americans just give it to them, and okay, the American taxpayer pays for it. And if, you know, money is irrelevant to the Zionists because they control the West and control its banks and their elite and so forth, and anything they wish for, America and the UK and the West will give them. So the truth of the matter, why they wouldn't have them, is because where are you going to put them inside the Zionist colony? They'll be an easy target. They're huge planes, and they need special runways. They need... they will be easy targets to destroy by a country like Iran. So the only reason that Trump didn't even fly them out of Diego Garcia Island chain...
Keep them safe and hidden.
Keep them safe. He flew them out of the United States. So it's irrelevant, really, and it's not going
to
happen.
Moving to the failure of Israeli-American war with Iran, and its failure to achieve declared objectives, which remains a major topic on Israeli social media platforms. Many commentators affirm that Iran still poses a threat to the Israeli entity.
Ella Khan, there are no noteworthy achievements in the war with Iran. The Iranians are still able to continue enriching uranium and may develop nuclear warheads in less than a year. Shavrim Shtika, why couldn't we, during the war in Iran, attack all the targets that pose a threat to us? We saw how much destruction and damage the Iranians caused in response to Israeli airstrikes with their missile retaliation. Nira Bar, we did not fully defeat Iran, and it still poses an existential threat to us. We did not fully defeat Hezbollah, and it still poses a major threat. And we did not defeat Hamas. But the ruling coalition wants to continue fighting. Why? To preserve a government of destruction?
Unfortunately, we ran out of time. Mr. Leith Maruf, a journalist, thank you very much for joining us in this episode.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. And may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household. Assalamu alaikum, my dear audience, brothers and sisters. Welcome back to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We've been reviewing the examples of financial support for other believers mentioned in the Holy Book. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioning giving loans to the others, charity, feeding, adds to this sheet, to this number of examples, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala adds placing the homeless. We quoted the story of Muhajireen and Ansar, the immigrants from Mecca to Medina with the Prophet, and the people who resided in Medina. We mentioned that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quotes that there were a number of believers in Medina who shared their houses with immigrants, despite the fact that they had difficulty, despite the poverty for their own. وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصَ In our narrations, we hear that some of these Ansar, their houses were too small even for one family. For example, just imagine a house having only one room. Despite this situation, they put a curtain in the middle of the room, in between. They divided the house into two parts, one part for the immigrant and the other part for his own family. This is very interesting and surprising. This is something that the Prophet taught these people. Interestingly, they are the same people who used to kill each other before the emergence of Islam. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, by the teachings of the Holy Book and by the efforts of the Holy Prophet, he implanted such love, such affection within the hearts of believers that they have shown such scenes to the world, to the history. So, you see, these examples might sound very easy to some of our listeners. They might say, okay, what are these examples? The Sheikh is going, we are looking for very deep mystical issues. You see, the most mystical, the most spiritual scenes are these scenes that we are quoting from the Holy Book, because this is harder. You see, it is not very hard for me to set my clock to wake up in the middle of night and pray for 2 hours. It is hard, but it is not as hard as giving money to someone else as charity, or giving place to someone else, despite the fact that I and my family need the place and I will be in difficulty. I believe that this latter is much more harder than the former, believe me. That's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala emphasizes on these social codes a lot. This is kind of a good act that we are seeking nowadays, even in the modern world. Let me give you an example after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ya muslimin sallu alayhi. Welcome back, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. We've been reviewing the examples of financial support. We have come to placing the homeless admired in the Holy Book. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter Mujadala, verse 11, says that even if you come to a gathering and you a person joins the gathering and there is not enough room for him to sit, make room. You see, very tiny, small issues. It sounds very unimportant, but it means to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The faith shows its strength in these small examples. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu idha qila lakum tafassahu fil majalisi fafsahu yafsahillahu lakum. When you are told make room in sittings, then do make rooms. Then Allah will make room for you in the hereafter. It's very interesting, very enjoyable. And this is the reality of spirituality of Islam. Just consider this culture with what is happening in our world. At the time of COVID-19, you remember that some of the modern countries, they were grabbing the masks of other countries, medicines of other countries. A modern country, a wealthy country, just compare this to the very simple society at the time of Prophet, a group of people who reside in Medina. They need themselves, they are in trouble, difficulty, but they divide their houses with the immigrants. This is something that religion teaches to the people. And about other examples as well. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter Nur, verse 32 says, وَأَنْكِحُ الْأَيَامَ مِنْكُمْ وَالصَّالِحِينَ مِنْ عِبَادِكُمْ وَإِمَائِكُمْ. Marry of those who are single among you. It is not enough that you have your own family, you married and you have your own family and that's finished. No, there are many people, many young people, they need someone to pave the way for them to marry. So marry of those who are single among you and be upright among your male slaves and your female slaves. It means do not be careless about their marital status. In another example, in chapter Mutaffifin, verse 1, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, when making a trade with the other believers, do not use short measures. Keep the just path. Woe to the defrauders who use short measures. وَيْلٌ لِلْمُطَفِّفِينَ. So these very tiny manifestations, apparently tiny manifestations of social codes of Islamic lifestyle, altogether comprise a very beautiful image, very beautiful appearance for Islamic lifestyle to the world. And they are not something old. No, they are very exactly the issues that today, even in the modern world, we need them. And they are going to help us. These are all about the financial support that Muslims and believers should have toward each other. The second type of support that we have as believers, we have to show toward the other believers is spiritual support. Inshallah, we'll talk about that in the next episodes. Thank you. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.
Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
feeling that's so deep inside, the faith in our hearts will always rise.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, sharing the little that is. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Arab English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously, sharing the little there is, this is something that we need to do anyway. And some people go over and above to really be true to that. And first up, as I would usually say, I would always mention the just examples from our infallibles, from our dear imams. So, for example, Imam Ali, his wife Hazrat Fatima Zahra, that they lived an impoverished lifestyle, the way they lived, even though they were not actually that poor, but their lifestyle was so simple. And yet, if people came in and they were asking for something, maybe they had no food, they would literally give the last of their food away, and then maybe their own family had to go hungry that evening. And yeah, so that's just there. We'll just start with that. And then I'll continue with actually a little anecdote from life of one of the famous martyrs from the Holy Defense by the name of Manucher Mordek. So he was actually in hospital waiting for treatment. And so his stomach just couldn't cope with the hospital food. So he had actually asked the family to bring in sort of some of the food from some of the religious ceremonies for Imam Hussein, because, you know, A, that food was probably much better, and B, obviously, it comes with special blessings. So he's probably thinking about both of these things. So the family did bring in food from the ceremonies, and there was actually enough food for all the patients on the ward. So there were two portions left over for Manucher Mordek, his wife, and another friend of his was actually sort of there with them that evening. And then all of a sudden a patient came in and said he hadn't received one of those special meals from the gathering. And so Manucher Mordek gave him another plate. So that means that he and his wife and the friend, three of them shared just one plate. Welcome back to A to Z here on Arab English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And look, I've just mentioned how one of the martyrs of the Holy Defense, Manucher Mordek, when he was in hospital and they'd received lots of food from one of the religious gatherings outside the hospital, because he couldn't eat the hospital food, and so he and his friend and Manucher's wife, they had sort of two plates of food to share. And then when someone came in saying he hadn't received a plate, Manucher gave one of the plates away. So yeah, obviously, one plate of food between three people, and one of them, you know, probably hadn't been eating properly, Manucher Mordek, because he hadn't been eating the hospital food. He'd have been really hungry, quite starving probably by then. But, you know, this is the way some people behave. So even when they have very little, they will still share that. And, you know, we know the sort of the ideas that, look, we've heard this, for example, about Arba'een and Iraq. People who have very little are sometimes the most generous. They will give everything away. And obviously we're told, for example, that in poor families in various countries, so if, for example, they have a guest, they will literally sort of cook up the best kind of meal they have, and actually, even if they only have one animal left to slaughter, they will slaughter that animal to celebrate the fact they have a guest. And yeah, obviously this is this sort of generosity, kindness, this sort of warmth towards other human beings, towards fellow believers and Muslims, is obviously something very special. And, you know, obviously we, for sure it's something we could easily train ourselves if we're not already there. Yeah, if we have something, and especially if it's something we like, well, why not share it with other people? Why not bring it to our relatives the next day? Why not give it to the neighbors? Why not take some of it, let's say, into our class, into the workplace, to share it amongst other people? Because I suspect that the more we do of that, the easier being that humble and that generous becomes. So we really need to instill that in ourselves. So inshallah, this is reminders for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z, and for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
This missile is going to be the third attempt by the Iranians, an attempt to send a satellite into an altitude that has already been experienced by Iran, an altitude above 400 kilometers. Iran's two previous launches failed. The U.S. president ridiculed the second failure with a very accurate satellite image on X, formerly known as Twitter. The picture Donald Trump released was received from the strongest American satellite. The accurate and real-time image shows the significance of military satellite in space at low altitudes. But there are only 9 countries in the world that are capable of launching military satellites. So, if the missile reaches the required altitude and places the satellite into orbit, the number of countries that are capable of launching military satellites will increase to 10. Will it happen? September 1975. This man, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the Iranian king, had asked for the purchase of U.S. weapons. But his requests were always undermined by then-Democratic U.S. President John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was assassinated, and his Secretary of State Nixon succeeded him as the next U.S. president. He showed a friendly face to the Iranian Shah. Nixon had good memories of the Shah. The Iranian king had sponsored Nixon's election campaign, so Nixon welcomed the idea to make the Iranian monarch more dependent on him. The Shah signed the first purchase contract with Nixon worth over $2 billion. At that time, it was the highest amount ever paid for the purchase of weapons. The Syrians trained the Iranian forces on the missiles. Tehrani Mokaddam and his entourage learned the subjects more than the Syrians had expected and returned to Iran. But Iran had yet to have a missile to be launched. The missile training should have been useful. From that point onwards, all of Iran's efforts were concentrated on purchasing missiles. A military delegation headed by then IRGC Minister Mohsen Rafiq Dost, was sent to Libya. Iran asked for missiles. Muammar Gaddafi, the Libyan leader, who did not have friendly relations with Saddam back then, agreed to sell a limited number of missiles to Iran, on condition the Libyan forces would carry out all of the stages from preparation to the launch of the missiles and that the Iranians would only stand by and watch. Iran agreed. On March 12, 1985, Iran launched its first ballistic missiles towards Iraq. The Iranian team did its first reverse engineering on the Libyan ballistic missiles. Will they succeed in making the missiles? As the first long-range Iranian missile, Imad can be under complete control of the operators until the moment it strikes its target. The launchers of the Imad missile are made in a way to be used under any circumstances. One of the most important factors in controlling and guiding the missiles is a high variety of the launchers. It can be mobile and even moving for this missile. After making ballistic missiles, Iran decided to make cruise missiles as well. Cruise is a guided missile that does not move beyond the atmosphere of the Earth. It moves close to the surface of the Earth and can confront electronic warfare. Its path can be changed and guided until it strikes the target. A type of jet engine is used in most of cruise missiles, while other missiles use a rocket engine. The missiles usually move at a very low altitude all along in order not to be detected by the enemy's radar. It usually moves with a constant speed faster than sound or close to the speed of sound. Due to the inexpensive nature of the budget it requires for production compared to ballistic missiles, and due to the constituents required to propel the missile to move towards the target, cruise missiles have been on the radar of many powerful countries in the world for years. The first cruise missiles Iran made and started to apply changes to were silkworm missiles. But soon, Iran had access to more cruise missiles. The outcome of studying them was the Iranian Nur missile. The sea-launched Nur cruise missile is one of the various types of cruise missiles produced by Iran's defense industries. It joined the country's Navy Forces fleet in the 1990s. The Nur is anti-ship and produced in very large numbers. The success in producing sea-launched cruise missiles led Iran to produce land-to-land cruise missiles as well. Sumar is one of the various types of cruise missiles made by Iran. The Sumar is so important that the Uzi Rabin, the father of Israel's missile industry, said he takes off his hat in respect to its designers. Sumar, the most precise Iranian cruise missile. Minimum range, 2,000 kilometers. Can be guided until the moment of strike. Low possibility for deviation. Completely Iranian guided system. Strike precision, 100%. After the Sumar missile, the Hawaiian missile, one of the cruise missiles made by the Defense Ministry and Armed Forces Logistics, showed up. The range of the missile, 1,300 kilometers. The issue of possessing and making missiles is one thing. The courage to use them is a totally different matter. After the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, Iran launched a missile operation against a U.S. base in Iraq in a retaliatory move. The moments the missiles were launched served as an ethical lesson for the military personnel in the world. To understand the importance of the strike on Ain al-Assad in a method involving mercy by firing the missiles one by one so less people would be injured, is in a way a contrast between the Islamic Republic's ideology and the U.S. supremacist ideology. Noam Chomsky, the famous U.S. theoretician, believes that the United States' hostilities and grudge against the Islamic Republic is due to the fact that the country seeks to protect its independence. He said the Islamic Republic of Iran is unacceptable for the U.S. because it will not give up its independence. The issue of striking Ain al-Assad in terms of shattering U.S. grandeur is so important that leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called it a day of God. The interesting point is the U.S. did not respond to the attack. Attacking Ain al-Assad indicates Iran's high missile power for the following reasons. Firstly, all U.S. defense and tracking systems were completely on standby. After Martyr Soleimani's assassination, the U.S. warships quickly left the region so they could not be targeted by Iranian ships. It means they did not feel that their bases in the region would be threatened. The military alertness in the bases was so high, they always had fighter jets and bombers ready for operation. Iran fired the missiles one by one. While it remarkably increased the chances for the enemy to torpedo them, Iran did not rain down missiles in order to evade a massive killing. Yet, at least 9 planes flew the wounded personnel to Jordan, and several Chinook planes flew to Baghdad. It was the first official attack against U.S. positions after World War II. After staging the massive operation from the IRGC's Aerospace Center, resistance groups in other countries also stage attacks on U.S. military bases. Iran did something that even the Soviet Union had not dared to do. Iran shattered the United States' aura of invincibility at the highest level. On the second martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, U.S. General held a press conference and spoke about the IRGC's aerospace muscle flexing. They admitted that Iran targeted any point it wanted. February 19, 2020. The IRGC Commander-in-Chief, alongside IRGC's Aerospace Commander, unveiled new engines. They are known as Salman and Zuhir composite engines. Composites are not metal, they're made from the combination of materials that give you cutting-edge technology. The materials can boost Iran's missile power to the space above 400 kilometers, and they are very light. This is one of the uses of the engines. Its next use is defense power against the enemy satellites. It means Iran will be able to hunt satellites in space. Recently, India destroyed one of its old satellites with this type of missile. So, it means Iran will not suffice to hit enemy's drones. From now on, if necessary, it will hit military satellites as well. April 22, 2020, Semnan. The IRGC decides to fire Qasid satellite carrier. It's a two-stage missile that uses liquid and then solid fuel. The engine is of the Zohair and Salman types. It is entirely made in Iran. The Qasid is supposed to launch the newer missile to orbit at an altitude above 400 kilometers. If it happens, Iran will be the 10th country to possess this capability in the world.
Only 50 years were needed for the Iranians to reach the edge of technology. 50 years ago, when the Iranian Shah was bewildered among the missile launches by other countries, he might have never thought the day would come when the Iranian youth will reach from the desert in Semnan to the orbit above 400 kilometers. Asadullah Alam, the prime minister of the government during Mohammad Reza Shah's tenure, described the youth as a bunch of lazy people. His prime minister, Razem Ara, also believed that illiterate people do not even have the potential to even make a pitcher. But today, the same youth have catapulted Iran to the club of owners of military satellites, and this is just the beginning. Iran has now become a powerful country in producing a horrifying weapon named Precision Strike Ballistic Missile. It means no other country in the world can force Iran by the threat of weapons to do what they want. Now, major powers know that they are very fragile in front of Iran's missile power, and they have to answer Iran for their military behaviors with respect. All the powers in the world know what is seen in military drills and on TV is just a fraction of the achievements that are displayed, and Iran's main missile power is by far scarier than what can be seen.
Mother. Good morning to you all. Greetings from Tehran. You are listening to Iran Radio. We start off this hour's program with Youth Station. This program is all about the youngsters and the things they deal with. So if you're interested to know about various issues that are all related to youngsters and young people, then I guess this is going to be your favorite program. With no further ado, let's get into the Youth Station. After that, we have Spotlight. This is a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. So let's bring everything into the spotlight. And we'll round up this hour's program with The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities concerning various Islamic and Shia topics. Every moment you share with us is very precious to us, so stay with us.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam my deen. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad prophet. Praise be upon.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Youth Station.
Yeah, this is Nahid having the honor of being with you.
Yes, and this is Asma. I also have the honor to be with you after so long.
Yeah,
eventually,
we're
back to home.
I miss you so much. I miss this program. I miss my great friend.
Same. It's all the very same. But then we're back.
Yeah.
So after good. Too much of stories and after too much of, you know, it was like a chapter of a novel and then that chapter is over. Now we're turning into a new page, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are you feeling?
Good. These days I'm feeling better, let's say.
Yeah. Speaking of what happened to the world, let's say, because it was a change, universally speaking.
It was a challenge.
Yeah, it was a challenge. But then in those times, there came this concept of you are the guardian of your country. And when something has been entrusted to you, you feel responsible towards it. And maybe half of what we felt as such a huge responsibility was because of this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the reason I call it a challenge is that you were trusted with your country without you being aware of it.
Not every just your citizen, country, your dear ones.
Yeah, and every citizen was bearing this responsibility. Mm-hmm. And many of us were not aware. We were not cautious about what is happening and about what we should be doing.
Yeah.
And then this challenge came and we woke up, we saw ourselves and the responsibility of taking care of our dear ones and at the same time finding the correct way, standing on the right position in this battle, knowing where we have to stand and our role as the citizens of Iran.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you are in those happy, peaceful days of your life, you do not recognize how much of responsibilities and how much of precious things you have.
Yeah.
And then once they're gone, you start to miss them and you start to count. You start to count your blessings. Like, you see, when you're healthy, you do not care that, okay, I'm healthy. You would look out for the smallest thing that you do not have and your life is missing
that. Exactly, them. So true.
But then once you start to, I don't know, feel sick and a very simple sort of sickness, you start to count it that, okay, yes, health is an important thing.
It was a blessing.
It's a sort of a thing that has been entrusted with me. Like, I have to take care of it. The same thing goes with your country. The same thing goes with your friendships, with your family, with your dear ones, and with the things you can do to the world.
True.
All of these things have been entrusted to you. And also there's another sort of precious stuff that sometimes you are entrusted with, and that is your knowledge, your wisdom, and whatever you can share with the world. So in order to talk back more about it, we have to go for a short break, and then we come back to see what's more.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yeah, we were just saying that sometimes you're entrusted with some precious things that you do not actually recognize them up until you lose them. But once you have them, you have this responsibility to take care of them. And in our narrations, based on what we have got from the Islamic heritage, this concept of being a trustee, of being entrusted with something, is very important.
Yeah, that's like, a great responsibility for every Muslim, that we have to know, we have to recognize it at first.